Welcome back to another episode of the Captain America Minute, where we examine the 2011 Joe Johnston-directed feature, Captain America, the First Avenger, at the rate of 1 minute of screen time per episode. I'm one of your hosts just a few miles from Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. This is Jim O'Kane of TVDads.com.
And I'm Hal Bryan, an airplane nerd from the home of the Experimental Aircraft Association here in Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
And I am Brian Fees, a graphic novelist and longtime Avengers comic book reader. And we have a special guest today. Kieran O'Connor is an actor who appears in this minute of the movie we're talking about today. And we're going to talk to him about his career, this role, how he got the job, and what he's done since. So, Hal, tell us about this minute.
All right. And welcome, Kieran, as well. We're sure glad to have you. But with that, Minute 11, the synopsis. In a grimy alleyway outside the movie theater in New York City, a large man towers over Steve Rogers, landing another punch.
You just don't know when to give up, do you?
He sneers. Steve, bloodied but defiant, wipes his mouth. I can do this all day. Bucky Barnes strides into the alley, grabbing the man by the collar. Hey, pick on someone your own size, he snaps, kicking the bully out of the alley with a swift boot. Bucky turns to Steve, shaking his head. Sometimes I think you like getting punched. Steve, catching his breath, grins weakly. I had him on the ropes. Bucky spots Steve's enlistment papers on the ground and picks them up, scanning them. How many times is this? You're from Paramus now? You know it's illegal to lie on the enlistment form. And seriously, Jersey? Steve brushes off his jacket, avoiding Bucky's gaze. You get your orders? The 107th, Bucky says, standing tall. Sergeant James Barnes, shipping out for England first thing tomorrow. Steve's eyes flicker with envy and resolve. I should be going. And that is Minute 11. And Kieran, thank you for being a special guest for doing the line.
No problem.
Showing us how it's done.
No problem. Happy to be here.
Well this... my first question is, you're English, and the person who delivers this line sounds pretty New York to me. What kind of training went into that?
It's a great question. So there was a dialect coach on the set, but to be honest with you guys, you know, I've grown up with American pop culture, shaped a lot of my youth, the WWF wrestling, all that sort of stuff. So I had always looked to imitate and try and copy accents from a very young age. So I was, the American sort of sound was quite familiar to me. But then, as I say, there was a dialect coach on set who'd give you a few little notes just to make sure that I wasn't slipping back into a bit of West Country England when I was trying to deliver some of the lines. So
less Cornish, more Brooklyn. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, yeah, I've often wondered about that, and this is just purely anecdotal, but it has always seemed to me that British actors have much, much more success doing convincing American accents and fooling Americans than the other way around. I mean, everybody sort of thinks, well, I can do some sort of British accent, but they have no idea sort of really, you know, what they're doing, and a true Englishman would just roll their eyes. But have you found that to be the case as well?
I mean, you know, I do understand the point you're making. There are, you know, there's a few occasions when you're sat there watching a film or a TV series and the accent just sounds way off. But, you know, to be fair, knowing how difficult it can be and equally having been the victim of some dodgy accents in my career, in my past, which we can maybe touch on later. You know, I'm not going to put anyone down for struggling with accents, because it's a tough gig to try and keep it consistent, certainly.
You do. I could hear you summoning your inner Hulk Hogan.
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's let's go back to the beginning. When where did you first get the call? Where, you know, what did your agent or your manager say? By the way, there's something coming up, and you might want to be able to be in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I actually thought it was almost a joke when I first got the call, because. I had done an audition for another film, a war film that I went along to an audition in London to play this soldier. And then, you know, thought I did a good job, as you do with auditions, and then never heard anything. And then I remember I was in London walking along Oxford Street at the time and I had a call from my agent. And she said, look, you did such a good job on this last audition. The casting director, who was Priscilla Johns, she wants to give you this small part in the new Captain America film. And like I said, I thought, well, first of all, I thought, wow, I'm going to be whizzed off to New York or somewhere crazy. And, you know, I thought, here we are. Here's my route to success. So I was thinking, you know, part of me thought it was a joke. And then part of me was really excited. And then obviously I found out they were doing the filming in the UK. So that was, that was a slight lead balloon, but still nonetheless a fantastic experience. So as I said, it was kind of crazy in the sense I didn't actually audition directly for the part. It wasn't something that I necessarily prepared for or mentally in terms of what I'd give to the character. It was all based upon an audition for another feature. So it was crazy how it came about. But obviously, once I was given the part, there was a bit of time preceding filming, and they explained that they wanted someone with a bit more hair than I have. And so you may or may not be aware that, and here's a little trade secret for you, but they're basically, it's a wig. I'm wearing a wig in the film, so I had to go along and do some wig fittings and some things like that in terms of preparation for it. But yeah, the whole experience was very exciting. And I just thought, wow, what a privilege it is to be part of something, especially, you know, appreciating now what the Marvel Universe has become. And effectively that being the first milestone in the series. So, yeah.
Yeah. And you, I mean, you had to do a lot of work for that particular scene because you were doing it with two different actors. Plus you were acting against nothing with the Lola VFX people coming in to do all that extra work.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, Jim. It was, it was not, I mean, you know, I wasn't long out of drama school. So, you know, I went to drama school in London. I'd done one TV thing on a BBC daytime TV show preceding this. So to go from that level in terms of low budget and low touch, shall we say, to straight into, well, first of all, I was already, you know, a little bit starstruck with Joe Johnson, Jumanji, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, all that. So, you know, it was just fantastic to be working with him. But yeah, it was what an experience of, and what a new level of you know, complexity and you know, all of that that comes with it in terms of going into that sort of film set, that sort of that vision that's trying to be enacted there. So it was crazy in terms of going in for the first day. And then obviously filming the scene with Chris Evans. Yeah, you're right, Jim. They tried two or three different things because they weren't even 100% sure then how they were going to do the whole making him look small and you know, scrawny. So they, you know, I had to do shots with him where he had green dots all over his face. And then equally there were shots where we played around with levels over my shoulder, etc. So yeah, it was crazy in that sense. Although, you know, again, being transparent, I didn't have a huge amount of lines in terms of, you know, or a huge character to get into, as I mentioned earlier, loud jerk. I didn't even have a name. So it was, you know, I tried to create a small backstory in my head like most actors do. And I was thinking very much of Biff Tannen from Back to the Future when I got this part. I thought, yeah, you know, he's the classic sort of bully that I'd love to channel in this opportunity. So yeah, like you said, Jill, it was crazy in terms of the different measures of and methods of filming that we did, because they were still unsure about how they were going to achieve the objective of making him look so small.
I got that whole you're desperately wanting to call him Butthead. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I was just going to say, you also, in addition to the special effects complexity, you also had the choreography of the fight scene itself. You're having a fist fight. You're throwing punches at him. He's throwing punches at you. I imagine you had to do that exactly the same over and over and over again, or how did that happen?
Yeah, you know, so you're right. There was a routine. So we had a fight choreographer on set. And to be honest, from memory, because this is going back a few years now, we actually did a bit more of a fight scene. We actually did sort of exploding out the fire doors into the street, a few more trash can moments, and then he was sort of thrown into the corner where the film that scene starts. So preceding that, there was a few little moments that we had. And then with regards to the punches and throwing, again, we had the similar complexity built into it in the sense of how are we going to portray the size difference and the punches, the angle of it, etc. So we played around with it a lot, but it was broken down. So it was quite fragmented in terms of doing continuous shots of the same punch. So in terms of trying to have a flow of a choreographed fight, it wasn't so much like you'd normally achieve. It was broken down into segments that we reshot. But I think that's why they'd taken out the complexity of the fight scene, kept it simple, because, you know, why make it difficult? But no, it was, from my perspective, it was great fun to do. Obviously, anything like that, you know, touching on the wrestling earlier, you know, anything like a bit of play fighting or stage fighting is always great fun to be involved in. And then equally, here's another point for you. When Bucky kicks me up the backside to send me on my way, you know, we tried that in a few different ways. And then he was trying to do a kick where it looked like he was kicking. And it got to the point where I said to him, oh, look, don't worry, just kick me for real. And let's just say I regretted doing that, because after about 15 takes of that scene, let's just say it was rather difficult to sit down for a week or two after that. There was a nice purple patch on my bottom. But, you know, that's the price of the things you do for the game.
I keep getting this image, though, if you took your family to go see the movie, that everybody was cheering while you were smashing Steve Rogers. Hooray, go!
Yeah, no, absolutely. There are little moments like that. I mean, my girls weren't born by then at that point, which makes me feel nice and old. But I can't wait to show them the film eventually when they're old enough and have those little moments. But no, it was crazy, because I don't know if you guys remember, but they actually used this a part of the scene in the original Super Bowl ad when they were looking to promote it initially. So all of my friends that had stayed up late to watch the Super Bowl, they were like, oh my God, you know, you're in the film and all this. And I was thinking, I haven't even seen it yet. And then obviously, seeing the trailer then, I thought, wow, it makes it look as if I've got a fantastic part in this film, albeit I've only in it for about a minute and a half. But no, I mean, the fact that I look back now and obviously the scene, and this is probably touching on a few points you might want to talk about later, but the scene's so pivotal to the storyline and the line as well. I didn't appreciate it at the time in terms of that line of you just don't know when to give up, and how it was going to be echoed throughout. So it makes me feel very proud and privileged that I was part of that very small moment, which does actually add a bit of weight to the whole story. So, yeah.
Well, it very much makes a point that we will touch on in other episodes, which is that one of the delights of this movie is that scrawny Steve Rogers had everything he needed to be Captain America except the muscles, you know, and your scene shows that he's brave. He's relentless. He doesn't stay down. He was Captain America without the muscles. And
yeah. And he even figured out the shield at the time, thanks to having that trash can lid.
Yeah. No, absolutely. You're right. There's so many lovely little, like almost like Easter eggs or whatever you call them, but just tucked into that scene that, as I said, when I was doing it at the time, didn't really appreciate how much it meant at that time. But yeah.
So I'm sure that this immediately wound up on your CV reel. And I was wondering how did that affect the rest of your career?
Well, don't get me wrong, Jenna. I'd love to say that Spielberg gave me a call afterwards, and and I'm sat here in sunny California, you know. But unfortunately, that's not the case. But I mean, such is life. I mean, it was a fantastic experience, and I've done a few jobs afterwards, but it didn't necessarily catapult me as much as maybe I would have liked. But you know, as I say, I think that's life, and it was a small part, and I'm just very privileged to have been a part of it. And acting is for me something that it's something I was involved in as a kid, and I always loved doing it. Always watched films and always had a great imagination. So for me to be involved in something like that, it just makes me feel happy. But I mean, in terms of how it sort of what its effect was, I can't really say it was a negative effect. I think it always gave me something to have a feather in my cap whenever I was trying to promote myself. But maybe, as what you may or may not have heard from some of your other, you know, people that have joined you on this show that have been through the grind of trying to be an actor and having smaller parts. Obviously, anything creative, artistic, you know, music related or anything, it's really hard to get consistent work. And, you know, for me, there's a mixture of things you need. There's talent, but there's also luck and a network, you know. And so I guess, you know, I'm resigned to the fact now that, you know, I had a great run. I did some great things. And, you know, I did a couple of scenes on in a friend's film more recently, which, because it's more of a hobby now for me. So I've got a friend who's actually doing well for himself and his films are taking off, a guy called Michael Head, and he's doing sort of more London gangster films. But he calls me up and he's got a small budget and he says, look, you know, do you want to come along and help me out? And I'm like, I'd love to. Because it gives me an opportunity to flex those muscles again. But no, I mean, 10 years ago, I made the transition to the normal sort of world of a proper job. And I thought, right, you know, I want to be able to build a family and own my own home. So I now sell technology. And so that's as exciting as it gets. But you're right. I mean, it's something even now. I was in Las Vegas recently for a conference and I'm able to reference it and say, hey, did you know I was in Captain America? And then I whip up my showreel and it's a good conversation starter, you know. But looking back to when I was single, and my wife's not here now, she's a fiery Latina, so you know, I've got to check my thing. But before I met her, you know, friends would say to me, you know, if I was in the bar, you should go and ask her, you know, for a drink and tell her you're in Captain America. You know, the amount of women in the UK that haven't seen that film, either that or they were just barefaced lying to me, but they really didn't want that drink. But no, so it's been a journey in terms of how I've been able to promote myself from the film. But it's as I say, I'm proud of it. I mean, really proud of my involvement in it. And like I say, looking back now at how pivotal the scene was to the storyline, it makes me very proud.
I keep thinking that people are watching, you know, like there's, like you said, there's kids, there's, you know, high school kids and stuff like that who pull out a phone and they're decided they're going to watch Captain America. And it's, you're in, you're on their phones. You're, you know, they're watching you in the back of a car somewhere. And
now he is the bad guy.
So is Biff Tannen.
Very necessary bad guy.
Yeah. Like he is Captain America's Biff Tannen moment there.
This is it. I mean, when I heard that they were doing the other films, I thought, right, you know, just like Biff Tannen, bring me back. I was like, I could be Lao Jerk's cousin from generations on.
You know, I've been waiting 70 years for this.
Exactly. He can have his retribution, you know. Unfortunately, that one didn't make its way round into the script.
Yeah. Oh, we'll have to pitch it to Joe and see if he can figure out a way to get it.
Absolutely.
So I did look you up on IMDb, and it according to it, one of your earliest jobs was a Doctor Who. If true, that must have been a big thrill for you. I bet that was a big deal.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And again, you know, I used to watch Doctor Who black and white stuff on reruns in the UK as a kid. So it was something, again, that when I got the opportunity, albeit another small part, you know, I had I was a stormtrooper guard trying to guard River Song's character. And I had to explain that she'd escaped. So, you know, I get all these good parts where they're either failures or bullies. But you're right. Again, it was just a day's filming from memory. And again, I look back now, I was quite young when I did some of the stuff in my early 20s. And it's always that saying of hindsight, because you don't really appreciate it at the time. You're thinking, right, you know, I don't just want a day's filming. I want to be signed up to something big. And, you know, so I was hungry back then. So, no, I mean, it was great. And again, I'm proud to have been a part of it. But I guess I'm able to look back now and see again that it's something that I should be really proud of, because it's such an institution, Doctor Who. And obviously there's a huge following across the globe for it. So, again, yeah, you know, it's something I'm proud to have these little moments in certain sort of iconic series and franchises. So
two enormous franchises. That's fantastic.
Absolutely.
And it's something, I mean, it's a legacy your kids and your grandkids and so on will have. You know there you are in your 20s and this is what grandpa was like.
Absolutely. You know, you're right. And like I say, I can't wait for that age where they'll appreciate a bit more. I've tried it in the past when they were younger, like flashing the showreel on the TV and like, who's that on TV? You know, they're not paying attention at all, you know. So I'm going to wait for that moment, and hopefully all the credits will come. But no, as I say, yeah, I mean, it's something I'm extremely proud of. And even now, like, you know, I encourage my two of my girls that are old enough to do it to start getting into performing arts and that sort of dramatic sort of stuff. Because I think even if you don't go on to do it professionally, it gives you really good core skills in life in terms of communication, social development, all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, no, it's always been something I've really enjoyed doing and have a big love for, both as a consumer of the product and equally on the other side of the camera.
It's really exciting just being, you know, knowing that Hal, I think you'd agree with me on our previous podcast when we talked about October Sky. An actor similar to your trajectory was Scott Thomas, who played Jake Gyllenhaal's brother in the movie. Right. Jake became Jake, and Scott went into he's working telecommunications now, but he's he talked about how he had a great time being an actor and that it carried with him into other phases of his life. So it sounds
absolutely like... Oh no, absolutely. And I think, I mean, that I guess this is the only sort of criticism I'd have of drama schools, in my opinion, at least in the UK, is that I don't think they prepare you for what life is like outside of acting enough. And so, you know, there's too many actors out there that, and this is not to discredit front of house work, but that only think that they can do bar work or cafes, you know, to be flexible enough to go off and you know, do what they really want to do. Whereas I think if someone had told me, you've got transferable skills here that can go into the sales world, into project management, there's all sort of like, you know, synergies. And then obviously I think then it gives you a solid secondary platform, which you need to have until you get consistent work as an actor. And that's a tough gig. And I think that's why me personally, I was faced, like I say, with that decision when I was living in London and knocking on 30. And I thought, right, I was looking at all my friends moving on with their lives. And I thought, I want that too. And I just couldn't forecast that in terms of the luck that I would get from an audition and what parts I may or may not get over the next 10, 20 years. So I made that, I was forced to make that decision. But I mean, don't get me wrong, you know, it is ultimately down to putting yourself out there enough. And I made that conscious decision to step back a bit. But it's still, as I say, something that I do as a hobby, and I still very much love doing it. And I'd like to think that once I've become successful enough to retire early, God willing, then basically I can go back to doing something like drama teaching or, you know, just giving back, because it's great if you can inspire children to be doing it. Because like I say, there's so many skills that can carry on into life. But, you know, especially now with the multiple channels and platforms that you can actually put content out there now, and I think that's only ever going to grow in terms of its quality. You know, I think it's great to encourage kids to be creative and being part of that industry as much as possible.
You're here, Kieran. A quick question for you. After you learned the overwhelming number of women in London who had never seen Captain America and were sort of immune to that entry point into their lives, after you met your now wife. Yeah. How long was it before you casually mentioned to her, oh, by the way, I was in this blockbuster film?
I think that went in within the first hour of meeting her, to be honest.
Pull the DVD out of your wallet. And say,
exactly. So, yeah. Exactly that. Here's my free copy. Finally work. Take it home. So she's from Brazil. She's from Sao Paulo. So again, I thought, oh, this is a long shot. I don't know if she's seen the translated version, you know. I whipped out the showreel. She was impressed, and the rest is history. Three little girls now, and busy life. So yeah, it's good. It worked. It worked at least with one of them.
Do you know how to say loud jerk in Portuguese?
I'm sure that I'm called. I think basically I've decided not to to learn it in full. But I understand some words, but I know when I'm in trouble.
Okay. And, when she switches to Portuguese, that's when, yeah.
Exactly. I think there's an element that's good to have plausible deniability and not fully understand exactly what's being said. There's a certain word beginning with P in Portuguese I'll leave it for your viewers to figure out what she might call me every now and then.
and the proper response to that is not, hey, I was in Captain America, so maybe, you know, that doesn't get you out of trouble, I guess.
Unfortunately not. No, it doesn't fly very well.
Never play that card.
These days. Yeah.
Wow.
No, I just hope the film comes on over Christmas over here, and then then I can you know get the banner out and start banging the drum and get some views on. And then and as I say, I'll spread the word about the podcast as well.
I don't want to disappoint you, but I just want you to know your children will never be impressed by you. And if they are, they'll never admit
yes,
it.
I know. I think I've already got that feeling. I've already got that feeling. So.
There's nothing.
They're friends,
you can do.
However, you know, your daughter's friends may think that's pretty cool. And that'll just baffle and irritate your daughters.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Stop humoring him, I mean, they'll be saying.
Yeah. No, I mean, there are moments, don't get me wrong, when I'll be walking down the street and you see someone wearing like a Captain America t-shirt. And I'm there, like, giving him the eye, like, hey, remember me? Let's just say
make
I've
a
had
fist
more
and
chasing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I've had more people just chasing him. Me than asking for an autograph. So, yeah, it doesn't really work. So.
I've had my butt kicked by Bucky, yes.
It's the lack of wig. I think that's where people are confusing people, yeah.
Well, they are available on Amazon, so
Yeah.
Wow. Well, Kieran, thank you so much for being a part of the show.
No problem.
This is the part of the show I think we all love the most, is just being able to hear from everybody who you're not on the director's commentary or the extra features of the DVD. So it's always great. We always feel like we're the missing part of the DVD extra features. So
absolutely. No, yeah. As I say, I was really flattered to have the request come out. Like I said, it's been a few years since we did the film, so I was worried about what I was going to be able to remember. But it's been a pleasure.
Have you ever had anybody reach out to you for conventions like Comic-Con or any of those kind of things?
No, not to be honest. No, I think I do remember one time I was looking back because I started seeing they were doing some memorabilia online, and I was just wondering if they ever sold any of the costumes that were from that scene or anything like that. I was going to put a bid in, and then I might be able to put myself out for Comic-Cons and I don't know if I'll find a wig good enough now.
Well, Brian knows people, so maybe he can hook you up if you're in San Diego anytime.
Well, and Jim, think about our upcoming guest. No spoilers, but who also gets in fisticuffs with Steve Rogers on the receiving end.
And
he does quite a few Comic-Cons.
Hitler is going to be on our show in a few episodes. We've already recorded with him. So he's got a whole little cottage industry going with school children all around the Midlands. So. It's a feature in that. Stay tuned for that. It's coming up on a future episode.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Wow. Well, Kieran, thanks again for joining us. I'd also like to thank our audience for joining us. If you'd like to continue the conversation, we're always available at Camp Lehigh, the Captain America Minute listeners base on Facebook. If you do like our show, don't forget to subscribe and leave a like at the podcast streaming service where you found this episode. Also, please check out our website, capminute.com, for the latest about our podcast topics and guests. And be sure to join us here next time on the Captain America Minute.
I can do this all day.